little jazzy version of On Wisconsin to get this program going. And if you're wondering, that was from the Jimmy Dorsey Band. I think it's a perfect way to introduce our guest today, Larry Mueller here, by the way. We're visiting with UW-Madison Chancellor Jennifer Mnookin. We can talk about a whole broad range of topics with her. She's the 30th leader of UW-Madison. Before coming here, she served as dean of the UCLA School of Law and as Ralph and Shirley Shapiro Professor of Law. But she's with us now and happy to be here and talk with us about higher education and how it is at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I hope you'll join in with your questions or topics. There's a little broad range of things we can talk about. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, maybe. We can talk about UW research, free speech on campus, all those things, and a whole lot more. Maybe you've got something even a little more specific in mind. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us. Email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Chancellor Mnookin, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with anniversaries. This year marks the 175th anniversary of the University of Wisconsin. What stands out in your mind about the university's legacy?
Yeah, so it is our 175th anniversary. There's a fancy word for that, demi-semi-sesquicentennial. Try saying that three times fast. I dare you. It's easier to say 175th, isn't it? It's you know, one of the things that's kind of amazing is to recognize that this university began the same year that Wisconsin became a state.
Yeah.
And so it's the history of this state and this history of the university really go hand in hand, hand in glove. We've grown together. And I think that our 175th is just a really nice moment for recognizing how important the university is to the state and how important it is for us as a university to make sure that part of what we're doing is meeting the needs of the state. And I think we're doing a pretty good job of that, though.
Yeah.
Goodness knows there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, it's a long, long time. And I mean, the UW has changed Wisconsin, I think, much for the better in so many ways.
I 100% agree with that, Larry, for sure. I think that we are lucky as a state to have this incredible, globally known research university as part of what we do and who we are. But it also says something really important about the state of Wisconsin, that there's been, over the course of our long history, consistent pride in and celebration of the importance of having superb higher ed as part of what we do.
Yeah. You mentioned research, and here we are just recently released that UW-Madison surpassed $1.5 billion in research.
It's amazing, isn't it? These numbers were just released. They get released each year, and this is the very first time that we have topped $1.5 billion in expenditures on the research enterprise, on putting money in to doing life-changing research of all kinds that really works to make the world a better place. It actually puts us eighth in the entire country among the nearly 900 public and private universities surveyed for how much we are spending on research. And kind of interestingly, we had about a 10% increase over the previous year, which was, I think, really impressive.
So not only does the research, which is monumental, we could talk all day about the different research that's going on here, but it has a big financial impact for the state, $1.5 billion.
No question. I mean, that's all money that's being, you know, invested in research here. About half of that comes from federal sources, from federal grants mostly. And, you know, it goes in so many areas. I mean, more than we have time to talk about. But to just name a few, we have an incredible center working on cancer, the Carbone Cancer Center. It's a center of excellence doing just amazing work to find new treatments and cures. We have great stuff happening with everything from work on macular degeneration to Alzheimer's and Down syndrome. We have our Institute for Research on Poverty that's nationally known for the research that we do to try to both understand and ameliorate poverty. And those are just a few of the many, many examples. Energy research, decarbonization, the list could go on and on and on.
I took a look at that list of who was ahead of us and who was behind us. Not too many ahead of us, of course, but I was pleased to see that we did better than Harvard and Stanford.
That's true. It's true. We're eighth in the country, and we were creeping up on that number seven. We're only separated from that number seven by $10 million, which is, you know, a big number, but compared to $1.5 billion, it's really not such a big number.
Well, let's take a look at some issues that we're facing here. Diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI. I know state Republicans are withholding pay raises for University of Wisconsin employees until the system cuts DEI funding by $32 million, I think. Maybe first talk, what value do DEI programs bring to the campus?
Yeah. So, you know, for us on our campus, diversity and inclusion are very important core values. We believe, and the research shows, that when people have the chance to interact with folks different from themselves, they learn from that, and that diverse teams actually make better decisions. So that's one of the reasons why diversity is so important. We also know that on our campus, not everybody feels the same sense of belonging when they arrive. Some students come from underrepresented groups, minority students who aren't, there aren't as many of them on our campus as we would wish, and some of those students can struggle a little bit more with their sense of belonging. We can see this in a lot of different areas, too. You know, we had a survey last year that showed that some conservative students don't always feel as strong a sense of belonging as they would like. I believe it's our responsibility as a campus to try to create a strong sense of belonging for all of our students, regardless of their identities, their experiences, their beliefs, or their backgrounds. And that is part of what really, really matters to us. And we can't and we won't give up on that project of trying to make Madison as inclusive a campus as we can be. You know, at the same time, Larry, I would say that there are those who've criticized us for the ways we go about doing these things. We will not forsake these important goals, but we are open to thinking about ways to do what we're trying to do better and in, frankly, a more inclusive way.
So is the university system working to negotiate with legislators over this issue?
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of a lot of conversations and a lot of engagement. I hope we can find a place that can work for all of us. Certainly, I strongly believe that our employees deserve these pay increases. You know, we all know the great effects of inflation, and a 4% raise this year and a 2% raise next year would contribute toward keeping up with that. And at this point, all of the rest of state employees were granted those increases. And yet the staff and faculty in my school and in all of the system schools all of the universities of Wisconsin are still waiting on those. And, you know, that doesn't feel right to me. I really hope we can find a pathway through this.
So it's ongoing. You're having ongoing conversations?
Ongoing conversations, Larry. Yes, we are. And I'm hopeful we'll find a pathway through.
You know, $32 million reminds me of just the overall budget. Budgets, 10 of the 13 UW systems universities are projected to have structural deficits in the current year. with, of course, expenses exceeding revenue. I'm wondering, how does UW-Madison stand?
We are in stronger financial footing. I am. We are fortunate in that respect compared to some of our system counterparts. I think that reflects a few differences between us and some of our system counterparts. For one thing, we have had steady and, frankly, growing enrollment. Although college going across our state and across our country have not been increasing, UW-Madison has... we had more applicants last year than we've ever had in the history of our university. Our high-powered research enterprise also brings in a lot of federal research dollars. And we've also had tremendous generosity from our alumni base and other supporters. So our budget, I would describe as, you know, we are in the black. It's still a little bit fragile. When I look at some of our peer schools and our competitors in other states, we are not sitting pretty, but compared to many of my system school counterparts, we are fortunate to be in a stronger financial footing.
I'm wondering, you know, with the some of the 2-year campuses closing, has that had an impact on the UW-Madison? Because there are fewer students enrolling there. Is that a reason why we're getting more?
So we don't have any of the 2-year campuses associated with UW-Madison. I think the challenges with some of the 2-year campuses across the system connect to the reduced college-going dynamics that we're seeing across the country, but also acutely here in our state of Wisconsin. And I think we all have an interest in turning that around. College isn't the right answer for everybody, and that's just fine. But as we look ahead to the innovation economy that continues to unfold in the 21st century and to the knowledge economy, I do think that for the good of our state's economy, it's important that the college-going rate not continue to drop, and that there's also a lot of evidence that in aggregate, going to college does provide real financial benefit.
Jennifer Mnookin, our guest today, Chancellor Mnookin, the 30th Chancellor of UW-Madison. Questions for her? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert and Jill Nadeau are producers today for the show. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining in today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the UW-Madison today with our guest, UW-Madison Chancellor Jennifer Mnookin. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Let's get to talking budget, so it makes sense to take it down almost to the individual student. I'm wondering about where we are financially and in relationship to tuition and things of that nature.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for that question, Larry. We are really concerned about making sure that UW-Madison is affordable for Wisconsin residents. Our tuition is one of the lowest in the Big Ten. But many, many students, especially here in Wisconsin, are getting significant financial aid. And I hope that everybody all over the state understands that. If there's anyone who isn't applying to UW-Madison from the state of Wisconsin because they don't think they can afford it, I'm here to say you probably can. In fact, if your family qualifies for a Pell Grant, that's a federal grant to support financial aid for students from lower-income families, you will qualify for our new program, Bucky's Pell Pathway. That builds on an old program we had where if you make $65,000 a year or less, you won't pay a dime of tuition. Bucky's Pell Pathway goes even further. If you qualify for a Pell Grant, we will work to cover all of your college expenses, not just tuition and fees, but housing, food, books, books. It's a pathway to try to graduate without any debt. And I'm really proud that 1,084 Wisconsin students new to campus this fall are getting either Bucky's Pell Pathway or Bucky's Tuition Promise. So, you know, a college is a big investment, there's no question, but we are doing quite a lot to help make it affordable. And I hope everybody listening to this will help get that message out.
How, is the application process, how difficult is that process?
Well, we have two different ways you can apply to UW-Madison. One is the Common App, which is used all over the country at a great many schools. And the other is that the UW system has an application process that includes us. We are one of the great universities in the world, and we are a selective institution. But about half the kids from Wisconsin who apply, a little bit more than half, do get admitted. So I'm not going to be misleading about the fact that we are a selective institution. But for students who've shown strong academics and good drive to succeed, we can be a really tremendous place for them to take the next step in their education.
I was thinking about my next door neighbor, daughter, who was not accepted, but then went to the University of Minnesota the last 2 years and is an A student in biology and engineering, bioengineering, I think, there, and looks to come here now and will be accepted.
Sure. Well, so, I mean, it's true. I'm not going to... There are terrific young people who aren't able to get in. We do not have enough spots for everybody who could succeed to do the work. But that is one of the reasons we've also seen some growth. And, you know, one example, we'd like to grow our engineering program. We would need to go ahead and be able to build our engineering building in order to grow the undergraduate program. But one of the reasons we want to grow the undergraduate program is that there are many students that we're not able to take right now. And we also know that the state of Wisconsin really needs more engineers for economic growth and for our industries.
Yeah, and it's kind of a pathway. I'm thinking about parents now. If your student was not accepted to UW-Madison, if you can demonstrate at another institution, that student may have a chance, a good chance to be joining at the second or third year.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Larry. We do take a number of transfer students. We even have some, if you go to another UW system school and you do well there, there are absolutely ways to transfer to us. Forgive me, I should have said Universities of Wisconsin School. We've recently changed that name,
yes.
And I apologize for using the old name. But so if you go to Eau Claire or La Crosse or Parkside or Platteville and you decide that you want to come to us as a transfer student, there really are opportunities for that, as well as students who may leave the state and then decide they want to come back and join us.
You know, you mentioned the engineering building, and that reminded me about the sort of the issue with the engineering building. Here we are just a few blocks away from the state capitol. And that means kind of have a front row seat on politics and various demonstrations throughout the year. How do you navigate that environment where academia meets politics?
Well, there's certainly that can be complicated, but it's also an opportunity. I certainly have spent a lot of time during my first year and a half beginning to work to get to know legislators and our legislative process. And I strongly believe that if we care about the state and higher ed, we need to find ways to work across difference and find pathways for investment for the good of the state and the good of the people of Wisconsin, as well as for the contributions we can make to the nation and the globe in terms of our research contributions. I have appreciated the large number of legislators on both sides of the aisle who do recognize what important contributions UW-Madison makes to the state. Sometimes, I mean, look, this is a time with a very substantial surplus, and so it's a time where there's a real opportunity to invest in universities, and that hasn't come to fruition at this point. But we need to continue the dialogue and continue engaging, because this university makes extraordinary contributions to the state's economy and to the education of so many of the state's most promising students. There's also a lot of evidence that when kids leave the state for college, the chances that they come back for employment go down. So we have an interest in trying to keep a greater number of our most talented Wisconsin kids here in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. I'm thinking about another friend whose daughter wound up at Yale, and she was always going to come back, but now she's thinking maybe she'll stay on the East Coast.
Right. See, if she stayed, I mean, you know, look, there's obviously lots of individual stories, and there's individual kids who leave and come back, and there's individual kids who stay for college and then decide they want to go see the world. But if we look at the broadest numbers, there's no question but that kids from the state of Wisconsin who stay in the state of Wisconsin for college are likelier to take a first position here in our great state.
Well, we should take some calls. By the way, a line or two open for you yet. If you want to join in, the number is 800-642-1234. Or if you want to email, the email address ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Jane in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Hi, Jane. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I was hoping that you might talk to the Wisconsin GI Bill. Wisconsin has the greatest benefits for veterans, and if our veterans are disabled at 30% or greater, there's benefits education-wise for their children through the UW system.
Jane, thank you very much. Comment on that, Chancellor?
It's a wonderful thing, Jane. Thank you for bringing it up. I'm really proud that we have a group of veterans on our campus, and we work to support their success here. And I think that the ways that the GI Bill and the ways that here in Wisconsin we support veterans and their interest in getting further higher education, and in some cases, as you say, even their children can get some of those benefits, that's a terrific thing. Thank you for raising it.
Yeah, it's a good thing to bring out. Thank you, Jane. Appreciate it. Let's go to Mark in Appleton next. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for doing this program. I would like to point out that you know, the UW has been underfunded and defunded for over a decade, and it's having serious impacts. UW Oshkosh has just laid off about 15% of its staff, and this is impacting our students. We're not serving. We're closing campuses and at a time of a surplus. And I wonder whether the people of the state of Wisconsin really understand just how bad things are and how much we've lost. The University of Wisconsin was just a treasure. And I grew up in New Jersey. We did not have such a wonderful system. And it's really tragic. And I don't know whether enough people know about it.
Thanks, Mark, for calling. Appreciate your call. Comments, Jennifer Mnookin.
Thank you, Mark, for raising that point and that question. I agree with you that we desperately need to find ways to increase public support for universities here in Wisconsin, that our future excellence will be jeopardized if we can't find ways to do that. We also need to understand why it is that fewer students out there are interested in or recognize that going to college will support their future success. And I think you're right to say that in a moment when there is a budget surplus, it's been disappointing thus far that we haven't seen greater investment in higher ed, where the returns to the state are so clearly substantial. Those conversations are ongoing, and I probably have to be something of an optimist to do the job I do, but I am hopeful that we can get to a better place.
Mark, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. In those financial circumstances, I'm thinking now of universities, colleges across the country are making cuts to liberal arts programs. And what value do you see in the liberal arts programs?
Oh, well, I think there's significant value in liberal arts, just as there's significant value all across our curriculum. I think one of the things we try to emphasize at UW-Madison is that we do want our students to graduate ready to make a contribution, including in the workforce, but that also your major isn't your destiny. That there you can study a lot of different things and then go have a lot of different careers. I'm really proud that in our Letters in Science program, we've invested in SuccessWorks, which is our career services programs for our liberal arts students to help them understand the skills that they're developing and how many of them will translate. In this complex economy, goodness knows that strong writing skills and critical thinking skills have a lot of value, and those are some of the things that liberal arts degrees can help produce. I say this as a parent, too, and I got to tell you, one of my children was a double major in English and film, and the other is majoring in computer science. So I see at a very personal level the value of both of these.
So what are the there are some new majors on campus as well, are there not?
We are actually pretty constantly looking at what we call our program array, at the various things that people can study and get either a degree in or sometimes a certificate, which is sort of our word for minor. And we are developing new such programs all the time. One that's going through the process right now is an environmental studies degree, for example. Another broad degree that could be in that area as an undergraduate major, and there are others. And we think about new programs both in terms of student demand and in terms of faculty expertise. And, you know, we want to be looking at where the puck is going, not only where it is today.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we have any figures or any idea as to an alum, when someone graduates here, their success in getting a job and getting positions?
Our job numbers are very strong. They do vary some by discipline and by what people are looking for, but overall, our job rates are very, very strong across a range of areas. I think we look at that both in specific departments and programs, and we look at that to some degree overall. We also look at our debt rates, right? And about nearly two-thirds of our students, about 62% of our undergraduates, leave Madison with zero debt. That's a number that surprises people because, you know, folks out in the broader world tend to think that everybody's going to college and graduating with a lot of debt, which puts a ton of pressure on the career point. And again, individual stories vary, and a third of our students are graduating with some debt. But two-thirds are leaving UW-Madison without owing anything. And I think that's an important statistic to share, too.
And I think along with that is the graduation rate in 4 years or 5 years is pretty good.
It's very good. In fact, we hit this year our highest four-year graduation rate, either ever or in a very long time. And our six-year graduation rate is actually one of the highest in the country among public schools. So, you might be surprised. Guess what our average time to degree is. Do you have any idea?
Well, let's see. I taught here for a long time.
I know you just retired recently from teaching class.
It's probably 4.5 to 5 years.
Well, I'm here to tell you it's about 3.75. Oh. I think it might even be 3.72. So the on average, students are actually graduating in slightly less than 4 years. Now, I got to tell you, Larry, we don't want them to go too much quicker. We think they're in college. We think they're learning something, right? But the sort of myth, in terms of myth busting, there's a notion that people are in college for 5 to 6 years. They're graduating with enormous debt. They're not finding jobs afterwards. None of those three things is true when it comes to UW-Madison. Our graduation rates are really impressive. Our average graduation rates are low. Most students are graduating without debt, and they're finding strong employment unless they're pursuing other forms of education afterwards.
So let's go back to speech for a minute, free speech. There, I saw some emails relating to free speech here. And the we did have, you. I think you mentioned earlier a little bit about there was the survey that was taken on free speech. Talk a little bit more about that. And what, as chancellor, what's your role in protecting free speech?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So I'm a law professor by training. So I'm not a constitutional law person or a First Amendment scholar, but I am a law professor by training. And I believe that free speech on campus is both our legal responsibility and a value. The First Amendment applies directly to us because we're a public school, and so we're part of the state, and so we have an obligation to follow the First Amendment. But I also believe, separately from that, that broad free speech on campus is what's best for all of us, that we learn in part from engaging across difference and from hearing ideas that sharpen our own. And sometimes those will be ideas that we agree with. Sometimes those are going to be ideas that we think are all wrong, but we still can learn from being in spaces where we have that engagement. What gets a little tricky sometimes is that sometimes really broad free speech can make it harder for students to have a sense of belonging. Sometimes when you hear viewpoints that you think are just really troubling or offensive or wrong, it can make you feel like you don't belong in a place where those ideas are being shared. And so we have a responsibility and a challenge to simultaneously be a place where there's really broad free speech, sifting and winnowing. That's one of our core ideas here at UW-Madison. But where we also work to make students understand that even if things are being said on campus that they think are offensive or wrong, or there's speakers who come who they wildly disagree with, that doesn't mean they don't belong. They still belong, and they have the chance to have counter speech or even protest as long as it stays within reasonable limits, or they get the chance to share their own views. I sometimes like to say that college should be a blend of safe spaces and brave spaces. You should absolutely have the spaces where you feel really comfortable and taken care of, but some degree of real engagement across difference and even discomfort is and can be part of the learning process.
Helen in West Salem has something for us that goes back, I think, to the engineering building. Let's go there. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I just wondered what the need was for a new engineering building. Does it mean more students, or is the building decrepit that they have, or what? I'm just curious to know.
Helen, it's a great question, and the answer is yes and yes. If we're able to build that building, we will be able to grow our student body in engineering by about 1,000 students. So that's not small. It's also a building that does greatly need renovation and expansion. It's not a good building. Larry is laughing at the state of it. And it will also let our engineering faculty and graduate students and undergrads do more of the cutting edge research that can build ideas that can make a real difference in our world. But yes, it will also let us grow our student body.
Helen, thank you very much for calling. Bob, Carl couldn't stay with us, but wonders what do the Republicans not like about the DEI classes that are being taught?
Well, thank you for the question. I mean, I think really you'd have to ask them more than me. But I think what I would say is that some of them are concerned that we haven't always had as broad a diversity of voices on campus as we might, that the politics of our students and our faculty do tend to tilt a little bit more progressive. That isn't because we're discriminating or biased. It's part of who's applying for these jobs and the demographics of some of the folks who are choosing to go to college at higher numbers. But I think there is a concern that in our legitimate focus on making sure that we are working to help some students have as strong a sense of belonging as possible, which is very much still a work in progress, we haven't always focused as much on other students and their sense of belonging. So, you know, we have put more energy into the question of how we can make some of our students from traditionally underrepresented and marginalized racial groups feel comfortable on campus than we have into putting energy into how we can make rural students feel a sense of belonging on campus. Both matter. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And I think it's fair to ask us whether we're doing as much as we can, as well as we can, across the full panoply of backgrounds, identities, and experiences.
We have just a couple of minutes left. What do you think, what are the biggest challenges facing higher education for the coming decade, let's say, or decades?
Well, I think one of them is this question of who's going to college and college going across the entire entire country. I think another is about funding, especially for public schools. There's a small number of privates that have an extraordinary degree of resources. We are doing research that keeps up with those. We are making a huge difference. But will we be able to keep affording to do that and keep investing in excellence? I think those are really pretty big existential questions for us. I think that how we navigate free speech and belonging is another big one. And then I also think that some technological changes that are coming, like AI, what does AI going to mean for how we go about educating students and also for the workforce? We have to be looking at technological developments and their impact on everything from the education we're providing to the future that our students will be helping to shape and living within.
Yeah, it's a big, very, very big area. And I know it's had some concerns for faculty who have worrying about papers and things of that nature that the DEI, you know.
That AI is.
AI.
It's true. ChatGPT, I don't know if you've played around with it, Larry, or if listeners, if you've played around with it. I will tell you, it writes a pretty decent administrative memo to a chancellor. I'm not suggesting that any of my direct reports use it, but I played around with it and asked it some general questions. And I wouldn't give its output an A, but its output was not terrible, which is both impressive and a little scary.
Yeah, and on that note, I want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. The 45 minutes flew by. I hope down the road you'll come back and be with us again.
Thank you for this invitation. I'd be glad to come back.
Jennifer Mnookin, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our guest today. It was great to be able to talk with her about some of the issues that some of the good things and some of the challenges, let's put it that way, that face the UW-Madison as we move ahead. It was great talking with her, and we'll get her back, and we'll do this again. Coming up, we're going to talk with the Director of Tourism for Wisconsin about things that you and I can do this winter. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.